The Why Golf podcast is brought to you by Skyscanner, the ultimate travel hack that searches billions of prices on flights, hotels and cars so you can feel confident you'll always find an amazing deal. Hello and welcome to Why Golf. We are on the road this week and we are spreading the word about one of the greatest sports on the planet. We're here at Sunningdale Heath and I'm so excited to speak about some of the guests we have coming up. You can check us out, don't forget, on Instagram, on YouTube and on the website as well. Just search for thisiswhygolf.com. Hello, good evening and welcome to Why Golf. We are on the road for the first time ever. And thank you to everybody for coming this evening. We're delighted to have you. Is everyone excited about the next 40 minutes or so? I'm sorry, it's been a dreadful day. It's been raining constantly for 15 hours. Is everyone excited about this? Oh, that's lovely. Thank you. We're here at Sunningdale Heath, which actually is a club I'm very close to. I am a member here and I love hanging out here. I love playing the course and being around everyone. And I'm super excited tonight to speak to two gents who I've known for quite a long time, Tom and Christian, Tom Reed and Christian Baker, looking very smart. I'm just going to wax lyrical a little bit about both of your careers. Tom, first off, you started the game of golf at the age of 12. You turned scratch at 17, at Pro 2009. You've played on the Euro Pro, the Sunshine and the Challenge Tour. In 2016, awarded top 50 US Kids Golf Award, only the second person in Europe to have achieved that. Absolutely brilliant. I could go on about the fact that you spend so much time with David Ledbetter as well. And Christian, you have a really impressive CV. You, 23 years down the road at Wentworth, came here and a whirlwind of energy here, doing a brilliant job. You've worked with leading amateurs and pros, including Ross Fisher and Harry Ellis, who's won the British Amateur Championship and the English Amateur Championship. Ladies and gents, can we put our hands together, please, for Tom and Christian? I mean, there's a lot more I could say about you, but we'd be here for another 3 hours. First off, how are you both? Tom, you've been coaching for, what, the last 7 or 8 hours?
Yeah, exactly that. 7 or 8 hours. Just finished half an hour ago. Yeah. And yeah, it's been a really long day, but coaching at the minute is super, super busy as the season's already started. So Christian and I are probably doing, I don't know, 5 to 8 lessons a day between the two of us.
My goodness.
And then squeezing in everything else that's important here at the club as
and,
well.
And a podcast as well, straight
and,
after.
And a podcast before straight dinner, after. Perfect.
Oh my goodness, having spoken for 7 or 8 hours. Christian, you've just been teaching. How do you feel after a day of coaching? Drained? Exhilarated?
Yep.
Did you have anyone that didn't listen to a word you said?
No.
Good.
No, I think it is draining. It's, you know, I think the one thing when you're teaching is it's like being in a meeting for an hour because someone's listening to every word you say. So it's not as though you're sort of, you know, if you're behind a computer, you can maybe kind of just disappear for 10 minutes and grab a coffee or have some doubt, you know. So it is, but it's also, no, it's all good fun.
Good stuff. Is there anyone in this room, Christian, that you would not coach? That you would refuse point blank to coach? I can see some talent in the room. I don't know, can you?
Plenty.
Oh, so good. Put your hand up my number if you've one, had a lesson from Christian or you're having lessons from Christian. Mike?
Yes.
Mike, how's your golf game going? How's it going?
Be kind.
I came to him to reduce my driving distance, and it's worked.
Really? He's the only one I teach who doesn't listen.
Oh, what a brilliant answer. So your game has gone downhill since being coached by... I know you're jesting. How many lessons have you had with Christian?
About 4, I think.
Yeah.
It's been a disaster so far, right? No, is it getting better?
It will do.
The fifth one's always the best.
The fifth lesson is always the best. Mike, enjoy your rosé. So, Tom, first of all, can you tell us how you here at Sunningdale Heath got involved with the club?
Well, it started with Christian. Actually, we were having a conversation in the staff canteen at Wentworth, where we worked together. Both busy coaches there, and we were sort of discussing the idea of having our own golf academy. And Christian came up with the concept of building a golf studio at Sunningdale Heath Golf Club. And a very long story short, the planning permission came through after the, what, second attempt, third attempt? How many planning permissions did it take to build that building out here in front of the clubhouse to build that studio? And we ran that together once it opened up for 2 years whilst I was working at Stoke Park for David Ledbetter. Christian was still at Wentworth coaching, and we were splitting our time between the two to try and develop the business here at Sunningdale Heath. And then 2 years later, you know, the golf club was struggling a little bit financially, and it needed some support, some more resources. And we essentially provided a proposal and a plan that we thought would future-proof the golf club, which, you know, eventually involved us, you know, delivering that plan. Mm. 18 months later, the golf club had to go to a vote, and at a 75% majority, which was a pretty nervy day for us. I'll set the scene. We were in this room, and there was 65 people in it, chairs lined up, Christian and I at the front, and we were almost like we were campaigning to be mayor, and we had a had a projector screen out, and we were doing a presentation about what we wanted to do with Sunningdale Heath, and the members voted us in at a 97% majority. And we became owners of the golf club 5 years ago now.
That was a huge day.
Yeah, a huge day for us, because there was a lot on the line. You know, our business here in the golf studio, you know, we were employed at other golf clubs. So we had everything on the line, which I think ultimately made the case more genuine. This was us devoting our careers and profession and lives to this project. So we were all in, and hopefully the members felt that. And 5 years later, it didn't go exactly as we planned.
No.
Because it never does.
What happened?
COVID happened.
Yeah.
5 months after we took over, we entered our first lockdown. And we sat it, didn't we? The clubhouse had been ripped out because we were going to renovate it. It needed some uplift. And the place was just a big dust bowl, stuff everywhere, you know, not open for business. And then the lockdown happened. And then all of a sudden, we're sitting here with a golf club. We're in lockdown, and we don't have a clubhouse, and we couldn't run business. And we both looked at each other and thought, oh, dear.
what have we done?
But interestingly, in that 10-week period, we were able to build a website, build a back-of-house system to run the business through Intelligent Golf, design a logo, and actually just put the whole thing together with a little bit more detail. So it was a strange moment, and it's odd to say that something positive came out of it, but 10 weeks later, we were way more ahead of the game. And then when we reopened in May, there was this just euphoric return for all of us as staff, but for the golfers as well. And so it really kickstarted us.
You had that time, that window of opportunity, and you seized it, really, and took on challenges and were successful.
Yeah, I one thing is interesting you saying there, I remember Alex, my son, says to me now, he said, Daddy, you spent literally all day in the office at home, because for the first week we were planning, because we didn't know, you know, what was going to happen, and we had builders that had gutted this, we had all the plans for the summer, and we were like, well, what do we do now, how do we adjust everything? So literally we spent 10 hours a day on Zooms with each other, with various people, just trying to work out, well, how do we readjust everything, what do we do? And it was a hard time. We tried to keep engaged with the members with things like quiz nights and everything else, because we really needed their loyalty and support, which they genuinely really gave us all beyond that. But equally, it was a time when people were thinking, well, what's the world going to look like in a year's time? You know, do I need a golf membership? You know, would I be able to afford a golf membership? There's so many questions that everybody had, and we had, and everybody else had. And we were like, so we just spent literally all day
brainstorming
and problem solving, because there was you know, it was just constant, you know, with the builders were knocking the door wanting their money, and we you know had to pay that and that sort of thing, but we were thinking, well, how do we get through this? So it was a challenge. We did, you know, we're thinking things like takeaway food, because we had our chef who we just got in, who, you know, was absolutely amazing, but we were like, well, you know, again, he came up with the idea of, can I do some takeaway food? So we started that, and I think we kind of pushed the boundaries with everything, didn't we? We didn't
It just sounds like you came up with so many great ideas. When the doors did reopen, it was it was a good place to be. You found that people were coming, they were playing, you guys were playing, enjoying the food here, and the momentum started on what is now a really successful members club.
Yeah, that's nice to hear, because that's how it feels. And a club's about people.
Yeah.
And for us, Christian and I, you know, we've been coaches for most of our adult lives, so we put a lot of emphasis, a lot of effort and care into people. And, you know, we do the job because we're good at it and we love it, but we love people, we love helping people. And being able to create a culture and an atmosphere in a golf club that's friendly and that's relaxed, I'd like to think that people that come and play this golf course don't feel like they have to be, you know, on their best behavior and make sure that their dress code's perfect. You know, certain things that I think traditionally golf clubs see as hugely important, we don't see as much. It's more about the experience and the atmosphere that you arrive to. And I think that that's what makes a club.
Yeah, it does feel like a very friendly family atmosphere here. You sort of walk in, don't you? And you feel like you're at home. You can have a cup of tea, have a chat with Kath, who doesn't want to be mentioned, but I am mentioning her because she's amazing and brilliant, and I won't go near her, I promise. You've got a question, have you?
Yeah, it must stem from these two, but I've been a member of about 8 or 10 golf clubs in my long career. And this is without any doubt the friendliest golf club I've ever seen in my life. It's unbelievable.
Oh, that is so lovely to hear.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I just want to point out that you came and played the other day and just jumped on the course and there was a pro-am going on.
Correct.
We're so laid back, and you can play wherever you like, it doesn't matter.
He just jumped. I love that. And anyway, Kath came and told you. She did. She's over there. One day I'll get Kath in vision. It's really lovely to hear. I think we want that as part of the community. We speak on Why Golf on the podcast about how important our mental health is and how important our physical health is. And we all know what golf gives us. But that feeling as you walk through the doors, you've got an eye, I know, Christian, on what food is served, all of your staff. You speak to them about welcoming people, the interaction, the stories that people share. It just can't be replicated anywhere else. It all happens in here, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think, you know, and that is absolutely lovely to hear. So, you know, thank you. You know, that's what it means to us, is a golf club's a community. And I think, you know, Tom and I's background being at Wentworth, Wentworth was, when we were there, a fabulous community and a real... I think it was Roy, who's here this evening, described the golf club as being like the local pub back in the day. You know, it was a community where people would get together. And that's exactly how we see the golf club is, regardless of backgrounds or, you know, demographics, it's where everyone should be able to come and feel welcome and comfortable. And yeah. I think our staff, touching on that, play a mammoth part
Huge.
Of that.
Yeah.
You know, I genuinely think we've got the best staff toe-to-toe with anybody else in the country, and they make all the members, I hope and genuinely believe, feel that, you know, they're their friends more than they are, you know...
Oh, totally. Well, Kath members. Knows more about my life than a lot of
exactly.
my relatives. It's like being at the hairdressers. We come and have a chat. Actually, I prefer to speak to Kath than my
and
hairdresser.
And that's what we've always said we want it to be, is like, you know, where people can come and just feel that it's like a home yeah. from home. And that's very hard to do... You know, that's down to the people. It's not about the environment in terms of the building. The actual fabric of the building doesn't create that. It's the people.
Yeah, it certainly does. You mentioned, just in terms of what's been happening at the golf club, you built a studio to our left for people listening to this. We're in the clubhouse, and if you exit left, you've got a studio. And then across the way, over the 18th and 16th, there are two other studios over there, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. The second one opened up just over a year ago now.
There's one over there.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah,
and also a physio room as well. So we have an in-house physiotherapist. We use that golf studio for members Pilates. I know you gentlemen have on Wednesday mornings over there.
Have you ever been to Pilates?
Yes.
Oh, good. No. You wouldn't know. I'm joking. I'm
Not
joking.
Yet. Not yet.
But the studios give us an opportunity to coach. I mean, with the UK, you know, with the British weather, we are struggling between 3 p.m. and 9 p.m.
Yeah.
And in our careers, in the winter, 6 months a year, business stops at 3 p.m. because, you know, it's difficult for people to learn, right? It's dark, it's cold, it's wet. The studios actually have enabled us to grow our coaching business because the peak time now to have golf lessons is between 3 p.m. and 9 p.m.
Yeah.
So having these studios has flipped the whole business on its head. There's no off-season for us anymore. And having them here as well, we teach 65 children per week at this golf club now, you know, which you times that, you know, through 12 months a year in 10 years time. And it really makes us feel great to know that we're contributing to the local community and to actually growing the game. It's, yeah, it's a statement that we hear a lot in golf now.
But, and just tell us a little bit more about the junior section.
So 100 junior members at this golf club. A very active junior section. In fact, our junior organizers over there, Craig, spearheading the junior program as he has done so since we got here. Logan, his son, is part of our ambassador program, who I was just teaching earlier on this evening. And we have four ambassadors at the golf club who are funded by the members who are here.
Can I just say, Craig and Logan, thank you for being here. And Craig, you do such an amazing job. I'm going to come over. Craig, you do such an amazing job. I get 8,000 WhatsApps a day about competitions that are going on here. Yeah. Where does that drive and passion come from to really push this junior section on? Because I reckon this is one of the strongest in the country.
It's definitely one of the largest in the country. It beats working, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
But no, I think it takes me back to when Tom and Christian took this over, and Tom said to me, well, you're always at lessons with Logan. Why don't you look after our junior section? At the time, there was like 12 juniors, and I went, that should be easy. Yeah. And then within about 2 years, we're up to, you know, 50, 3 years, 60, so on and so forth. But you know, it's just really, I mean, I love the game. I've always loved the game. And I'm just really proud to be part of growing that game at this club. It's just great.
And everyone's, the children are happy on a Sunday. Everyone's smiling, playing golf, coming in.
Oh, no, absolutely not. We force them to play. No, they are absolutely happy.
Logan, do you get forced to play, or do you want to play?
Well, I play whenever I want. It's just, to be fair, it's my dad that books me in. I just walk up and play and have fun with my mates.
Yeah, and you're pretty good. What's your handicap?
My handicap's 5.5.
Does he get a round of applause? Logan's off 5.5. So good. How old are you again?
15.
15 years of age. He's a bit of a talent, isn't he, Christian?
Yeah, and I mean,
there's a lot of talent in the room, but particularly over there.
It's Christ. No, I think, and again,
the lack of talent there, Craig, is there? Oh, sorry. It's fabulous here. It really is lovely. I want to touch on coaching. Oh, diversity as well. Let's go there. The membership here is 50-50.
Yeah.
Women to men. How did you achieve that? And how many members do you have? And is there an aim for a certain number? Are you at capacity now?
So we had a head start because most golf clubs, I think it's about 20% ladies, 15% ladies, and obviously we originally were a ladies' golf club. So at least we had that head start that we were kind of 100% ladies.
Yeah, originally. For those listening, this used to be a ladies' golf club.
Way back, yeah. So originally it was a ladies' golf club, and then probably about, I think, 20-odd years ago, they started sort of allowing men members, but there was still far more female members than there was lady members, even when we took over. But we always wanted and intended to try and keep it half and half, which is what we've got now.
Yeah.
And that's what we want to, just because to keep a balance. And to try and, if you only have 15% lady members, where's the inspiration for young girls to play?
Yeah.
Because, you know, they don't have any role models, for example. So there's lots of things like that where we're very aware that we need to do that. And whether it's small initiatives, whether it's capping memberships and keeping certain categories open, to encourage that, but we're very aware that we want to keep, ideally a third, and a third would be ideal.
Okay.
So we've got 100 juniors. We probably can't take many more than that, but we can try and keep the sort of ratio 50-50 sort of amongst the adults as well, which we currently are.
But they're thriving sections, aren't they? We've got some ladies in the audience. Do you enjoy the ladies' section? And when do you, for everyone listening and watching, when do you play? What days?
Tuesday. But for me, I'm just a member a year and 7 months, and I moved from Northern Ireland. And I have to say that I've been made very welcome here. Leaving a club, Castle Rock, where it was very friendly, I was just a wee bit worried about it, but I have to say everybody has made me feel really welcome, and I love my golf.
Oh, that is wonderful to hear. It really is. And you enjoy your golf here at Sunningdale Heath?
I haven't ever been in such a friendly club in my life. And I've been playing golf for about 50 years.
And what makes it so friendly?
People, yeah. And the welcome. And as May has just said, the girls here are fantastic. And so the men. I mean, we're just all good fun together. Every remark's in. You'll always have a game. No matter what standard you're at, you can always play.
Do you feel happier when you come here?
Much.
Yeah. Much. Helps the brain.
It's a therapy.
It's therapy. It's free that you're offering free therapy. Did you know this? Did you know?
It's interesting. There's a person I teach, and she was actually told by her doctor that the best medicine for you is golf.
Really?
And on a very serious note. And aww. I kind of think, you know, there's a very serious side to that. I do think, you know, there's the social aspect as well as the fitness and the health side of it, you know, walking 2-3 miles. But there's also, you know, the social aspect of actually having conversations with people and, you know, sharing problems, whatever it might be on the golf course. And I think people on the golf course maybe relax a bit more and that side of things to talk a bit more openly and what have you. So I do think golf is extremely important in people's lives. And I think we as a golf club recognise how important the golf club is. You know, it is a business, but it's way more than that in the sense of it's very important to people's lives. Mm. The golf club becomes part of your life. And when you make changes or what have you, you have to bear in mind you might be affecting people's lives.
Yeah.
So that is you know, every decision becomes an important decision.
Oh, it's so lovely to hear. And you are really changing lives actually here and just really enhancing lives. I know our audience, they are so intelligent and have so many wonderful questions to ask. One here from Steve. Golf historically can be seen as elitist. What would you say is being done to break this down? And what do you do here at Sunningdale Heath to encourage everyone?
Well,
Tom,
we could start with dress code. I think that's changed a lot over the last few years. I think that fashion and golf have always been synonymous. But I think now you can actually, they call it, Adidas call it the petrol station test. So if you play golf and then have to pick up petrol on the way home, do you feel comfortable getting out of your car in your golf clothes? And I think now where you wear hoodies, you actually can't tell the difference between your casual clothes and your golf clothes. I think dress code has made it more accessible. I think some people that knew that get into golf don't necessarily feel like they have to dress up to do an activity. So I think that that's a barrier that's been broken down over the last 15 years. And fashion's now really celebrated in golf.
Yeah, it certainly is. I'm not particularly trendy on the golf course, so I'm open to any sponsorship available. Steve, thank you. Did that answer your question? Yeah, good stuff. One here from, Coxie, Roy Cox. He's been at this club for 142 years. Tom won, I'm joking, you look great from a distance. Tom won the Trilby Tour. You won the Trilby Tour, Tom. What year was that?
I can't even remember, Di.
Oh my gosh.
When was that? 2010. It was my first professional victory.
Was it?
I had to wear a Trilby hat as part of the uniform. And
is it hard to play in a Trilby hat?
Yes, yeah. me and hats don't go.
No.
But it's part of the uniform and they fine you if you didn't wear them. So I was fully kitted out. And
because you have a good head, you don't, you know.
The hair's still there.
Yes.
Yeah, that was...
Sorry, there is a question, Roy. Can you describe the format of the tournament of the Trilby Tour? How many rounds, courses and competitors? Can you remember?
Roy, this is not a question I was expecting tonight. Let me think. So it was the top four scores out of 100 players going to a playoff. And the playoff was with two Philip Golding and Philip Archer, if you remember
goodness.
Those two.
Yeah, but Philip Archer, I did an interview with him in the Man United changing rooms one time.
Oh, did you?
Anyway,
yeah, he's a big
fan. Digress. Yes.
So at the time, I was a year one professional, wet behind the ears, going out there just free swinging. And I was playing against two European Tour professionals. And luckily for me, I had a sort of defiant attitude at the time. And I thought it'd be really good to get one over the tour players. And it propelled me to play some good golf. And we had a four-hole playoff. And I birdied three out of the four holes.
Tom!
And hold a big 50-foot putt on the last green to take the trophy.
Round of applause. Woo-hoo! That's incredible.
I haven't told that story for 10 years.
Oh, well done, Roy. That's brilliant. One here from Stuart from Northern Ireland. So you say Stuart. Which is more rewarding, playing your golf course or running your golf club, Christian? Good question, Stuart.
I would say running.
Running, right.
Running versus playing. Yeah.
Okay.
I think...
Do you still have a passion for playing golf?
Mild.
Okay, yes, yeah.
No, well,
you're
absolutely
teaching it all day, aren't
you? I think it's the sort of thing, social golf, absolutely. But yeah. No, I think running it, because having been involved with it for so long and listening to people for so long about what's good and bad at golf clubs, what's good and bad in golf, what's good and bad about the sport, we can try and do things we think will actually people want. So we assume, you know, golf is very stuck in its way historically, isn't it? Golf clubs are stuck in their way, traditions, and all this is a word that's used
all the
time.
You're trying to change the mold, though. You're not doing it.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So what we don't want to do is we don't want to lose tradition. We don't want to forget the history of the game or the club, but we have to move forwards. Otherwise, if we don't change, you know, we often give the example how families operate.
Yeah.
So if you went back, and don't shoot me down for this one day, okay?
Okay. Ready.
But if you went back, say, 40 years, okay, it was very stereotypical that dad and the boys in the house would go and play golf on a Saturday and Sunday. And because they'd been working, dad had been working a week, and mum stereotypically might have been bringing up the children, didn't necessarily have a full-time career like dad would have. That's all changed. Parents now, I think mum's been to university, he's got the same degree as dad, they've got the same career as dad, they've got the same professions. They both work just as hard, I'm not saying they did back then, but as in they've worked, let's say, the 9-to-5 week. So now families operate very differently. And what we're seeing is golf clubs, maybe still some of them stuck in their ways. And what we're saying is, well, their families operate different as a unit now. So it's very much what we believe in is a family operates where mum, dad and the children want to be together every weekend because they've all been working in the week and they want to see each other and operate as a unit during the weekend. And what we're saying is, so how do we embrace that? So we can come up with ideas to try and encourage that versus, like I say, stereotypically, I think a lot of golf clubs still don't necessarily embrace that.
Embrace the families, absolutely, as the weather outside, my goodness, it's literally raining cats and dogs. So you actually can't go anywhere. You're an audience that cannot escape this right now. We will be moving on in a moment. But Simon, thank you, Simon, for your question. You can take another sip of your beer. Biggest golf teaching myth, what is it?
Keep your head down.
Oh, why is it a myth for everybody?
Well, keeping your head down makes your body really static. So if I keep my head down, I'm fixed. My body actually can't move. And the golf swing is a movement. You know, by definition, it's a swing.
Yeah.
So the best thing you could do is keep your eye on the ball, because once you've hit it, you then follow it with your eyes, which allows your body to move. So if anyone ever tells you to keep your head down, bad advice.
Just after three lessons while I'm here.
Yeah, I was going to say, no, it's actually £12.50, that tip. So he's going to wait when you leave. What makes a good coach, just to finally finish on? What makes a good coach?
The short answer, I think we always used to saying be a chameleon. So adapt to who you're talking to, because Christian and I today would have taught 6 different people each.
Yeah.
And we might have a lady who's 50-year-old that plays off 20, and then in the next lesson, a 7-year-old that's just started playing golf. So as a golf coach, you have to be reactive to who's in the room and a level of empathy.
Yeah.
You know, you have to ask good questions and listen to the answers. That gives you the framework to give a really good golf lesson. So again, it does center around being good with people.
Which you both are. Gents, oh, you're a treat to speak to. They've done brilliantly. Have you had a hole-in-one, Tom? I know you have. You've had a few. How many? How many?
I've had 19.
19 holes in one. Oh, Christian, I'm hoping you've had a few as well.
No, I'm about half that. Not even that, 6.
Still pretty good.
Well, says it all, doesn't it?
You can say, but between them, the gents have had 25 holes in one. Anyone had a hole in one in the room here? Oh, yeah, let's go. Where was your hole in one?
Hole 3, 148 yards down the hill. Couldn't see it. Loads of people clapping. Went down, pulled it out 3 years ago.
3 years. How did it feel? Did it feel good?
It felt fantastic. The rest of the round was absolutely awful.
Oh, don't talk about that. Did you buy it? You bought drinks in the clubhouse afterwards? £200 bar bill. Oh, good for you. Where was your hole in one?
Mine in Glashidi in Donegal. And I didn't actually see it go in the hole. All the ladies that were behind me did. I had put my head down to pick up my tea, and I heard this great roar. And the ball had gone in the hole.
Oh.
On the 7th in Glashidi.
I'm going to Google that hole. Round of applause, please. Anyone else had a hole in one? Anyone else? Oh, my son's had a hole in one. Have you? Where was that? I can't remember.
The one with par 3 course.
Oh, there we go.
The first hole.
The first hole. What club did you use?
7-iron.
7-iron. Britt, can we give him a round of applause? He was when he was 7. Oh, he left me hanging, didn't give me a high five. Thanks, Maxie. Gents, have you had a hole-in-one? Oh, Steve, go on.
Sky Sports' Robert Lee, former pro on tour, has never had a hole-in-one.
Spread the word. Robert Lee, who I used to work with, has never had a hole-in-one. My goodness, and he's a pro. Oh, what?
Two kids, eight-year-old and a 12-year-old was in front of us. Big scream, next thing in front. Thought they'd been hit by a ball. We went up, eight-year-old says, my brother's just got a hole-in-one on the 6th.
On the 6th hole, amazing. He holed a 5-wood from 210 yards
correct.
On Sunday for a hole-in-one.
12-year-old.
Oh, that deserves a ripple. Come on, give him a clap. Amazing, amazing. Thank you. I'll just mention my hole-in-one. When I was 14, so my dad had to pay for the bar bill, Rose-on-Sea Golf Club, and it was the second hole, and it was a thinned 5-iron and went straight down. It was a terrible, terrible shot, but it still counts. Thank you for your time. I hope you're going to listen to our next guest. Can we please give one more round of applause for Tom and Christian? Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break. This episode of Why Golf is brought to you by Skyscanner, the ultimate travel hack that searches billions of prices on flights, hotels, and rental cars, so you can feel confident you'll always find an amazing deal. Now, I end up traveling around the world quite a bit for golf, whether that's leisure to play at that special course or when I'm working, but travel planning can feel overwhelming and pretty stressful. There are so many options for flights, hotels, and cars. Which one is best for me? What is a great deal? Am I missing out on a great option? Right, okay, breathe. This is where Skyscanner comes in, making everything simple and easy. Skyscanner has been helping travellers for over 20 years, and because they are fellow travellers, they never pressure you to book or manipulate prices. And tools like Explore Everywhere or the new Savvy Search AI feature help you explore and find that perfect trip when you don't know where you want to go. I used them recently when I was looking to book a trip to Germany and was amazed with how quick and easy it was. I went to skyscanner.net, searched for my dates and airports, and found exactly what I was looking for with times and prices. And it was also easy to add hotel and car options to my trip too. So when you're booking your next adventure, whether that be to Augusta or Abu Dhabi, St Andrews or Spain, just head to skyscanner.net or download the Skyscanner app to start building your next dream trip away. Amazing deals for flights, hotels and car hire all in one place with one simple search. Skyscanner, proud partner of the Why Golf podcast.
Hello, Why Golf listeners. Emma Saunders here. If you're enjoying the latest episode, then you should also check out On Tour with Sport 24. Each week, I'm joined by my trusty TikToking travelling companion, Rob Adcock, as we explore sporting cities across the world. So whether you're looking for the best way to enjoy the Las Vegas Grand Prix, make the most of your day at Wimbledon, or find out about the history of some of the world's biggest football clubs like Real Madrid, this is the podcast for you. So listen to On Tour with Sport 24 via your favourite podcast provider.
Our next guest here at Sunningdale Heath, I'm really happy to be sat next to Mike Brown. Mike, you play on the G4D Tour, and I'm going to tell our audience a little bit about you in just a second, but please put your hands together for Mike, who's been incredibly successful of late on the golf course. So great to have you here. Now, your golfing career started quite late. Let's go back to where it all started. You were a gunner in the British Army Royal Artillery, and you spent 13 years doing that. Yeah. And then you didn't play golf back then.
No. I didn't even have anything to do with golf. So.
No, and so you had an accident. Take us back, if that's so,
yeah,
okay.
Basically, I was on a training exercise at a place called Longmoor, which is down near Portsmouth. So we were basically just out there doing some exercises and ended up breaking my leg.
Your left leg?
Yeah, my left leg. So I didn't think nothing of it. Thought, 6 weeks, I'll be good to go again. And then went to the hospital, got Casivac there, and basically got an infection. And we don't know where the infection come from, but it ate every muscle inside my leg. I got an infection called streptococcal. So it's like a bacteria-eating infection, etc. And it pretty much just ate everything inside my leg. So yeah, that was sort of the demise of me being a soldier, really.
And you had, I've got here, you had 22 limb salvage operations.
Yeah.
So over a period of how long?
So yeah, in total, I included in my leg amputation, I had 30 operations, but I had 22 main operations that were 6 hours plus.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah,
Mike.
So yeah, it was crazy. But yeah, back then, I didn't really know much about it. I was on 60 odd tablets a day, and you know, it was just, I was on a downward spiral to wherever I was going to end up. But yeah, so cut a fine line. I was in a thing called an Elizaroff frame for 2 years. So if you can imagine
a frame on your leg, yeah.
Yeah, so if you can imagine like a bicycle wheel, I had five of them going from my hip down to my ankle, and where the infection had ate all my muscles inside my knee. They took everything out and then re-broke my leg. So I had to stretch it a millimetre a day for 2 years. So
you had to stretch it yourself,
yeah,
a millimetre a day?
Yeah, with a 10 mil spanner, and yeah, that was it.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. And you were in a lot of pain for 2 years,
yeah.
Excruciating pain.
Yeah, it was... My mind, your mind's a funny thing when you go, like, I can't remember the pain I was in, but yeah, I was on,
goodness.
Like I say, I was on like 60 tablets a day, so I couldn't really feel much mentally or physically. But yeah, that was that's mad when you think about it now, because I don't think about it much, but until I talk about it, it's like, yeah, it was crazy.
And so back in 2013, when the doctor said to you, there's an opportunity, there is a scenario where we could take your leg off.
Yeah.
What was going through your mind?
So it was the easiest decision I ever made, because I was what they call it, elective amputation. So it was my choice. Because I'd gone through so much for that 2 years, that I knew that my quality of life wouldn't be worth doing. I wouldn't have had a very good life. So it was sort of an easy decision when he said it didn't work. So after all that 2 years, that frame didn't work. So he's like, you're going to go back in the frame for another 2 years. And I was like, no, I'm not having that. And
well, you're on all these drugs.
Yeah,
which
I was like, and in a little story as well, like,
yeah,
going back to the mental health side of things, like, I was in a stage at that particular time where I didn't really feel a purpose in life. And yeah, I was just thought I'd better off out of it. So yeah, one thing led to another. And, you know, fast forward a few months, my leg was actually amputated and I made that choice. And it was at that stage that I realized I sort of seen a light. I was back running within 3 weeks of having a leg. You know, it was just amazing. And then that's pretty much when I found golf. So,
wow.
Yeah,
so you felt immediately better?
Yeah, like
I was out of pain.
I had no pain. I was...
And this, the prosthetic leg that you have now...
Yep, it wasn't the same as this one. This isn't very advanced to what I basically started on. You know, like a mountain bike shock?
Yes.
I basically started on one of them.
Right.
Yeah, so
quite difficult to walk to start
with.
There was
no mechanical. It was just all, like, all a hinge, and there was nothing that could stop me. So it's like a learner leg, basically.
Okay.
So you have to... I was at a place called Headley Court, which is not far from here, I don't think, Leatherhead.
The rehabilitation centre.
Yeah, so that's our rehabilitation centre. So basically you start on a basic leg and then you just work your way up. And then I got to a run-in, and then, you can get what they call it, which I've got now, which is a microprocessor leg. So it knows what I'm doing before I do.
Microprocessor leg.
Yeah, so it's got a gyroscope in there. It's got a computer system in there. It attaches to my phone, and, yeah, it's amazing. So,
and so what do you press on your phone?
So there's just got an app, and then I just go into it, and, yeah,
You can press running.
Yes,
or...
so I've got running, cycling. If I want to go to the gym, I can just do like press up mode, so it locks it out, so I can get down and do press ups. Yes, yeah, it's pretty cool.
And do you take it off at night?
Yep. I put it on 7 in the morning, and so it's on all day. So yeah, I'm really lucky. I've got the best of a bad situation with losing two hinges. So I'm what they call a through knee amputee. So you know, I've got a really long stump. I've got all my femoral head basically.
Right.
My femur.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm able, that's why I'm able to do so much. And it's pretty a good situation for me to be in.
Okay, so, and you've have per year, do you have the same leg or do you have to go through a few?
Well, thanks to golf, I go through about six a year.
Do you?
Yeah, because I walk so much.
Because you're constantly walking.
Yeah,
I know, we've played golf together, and I just was so impressed because we met through the On Course Foundation, which is a foundation that rehabilitates injured servicemen and women through the sport of golf. And tell us how you came in touch with On Course.
Yeah, so this is where my golf journey started. I was in a place called Tedworth House, which is a reconvalescent centre. So you go there after an operation or whatever. And I was a avid motocross rider. I was a footballer, rugby player, etc. And back then, like, obviously after losing my leg, I couldn't do that. So I seen a poster on the wall for golf. And yeah, that was me. I said to my sergeant that was looking after me at the time, I says, can I go and have a go at that? And he was like, yeah. So I went and did a one-day tester. And instantly fell in love with it. So.
You fell in love with golf straight away. Was it quite hard to start with?
Oh, I was absolutely useless.
Really?
Yeah, I couldn't hit a ball to save my life.
How long did it take you to get one airborne?
Probably like 3 hours.
Okay.
Yeah, so we spent all day there and I was doing bits and bobs. And I hit one shot and it went 50 yards. But I felt such an accomplishment that I was like, I can do this. You know, it was like, I had literally just lost everything. So I'd lost my job and all that. So it was like that particular moment in my life will never leave me.
I am so overwhelmed by your story because it shows such strength of character. I know you were in a really dark place, but I read in an interview as well that you said, I just didn't want to feel sorry for myself because there are other people in worse situations. And to come up with that statement, I find
that was so
strong.
That was like, when I was at Headley Court, I mean, I was seeing my mates coming back from Afghan and Iraq and they had nothing, you know, they had limbs, all their limbs missing and, you know, horrendous things. And I was, you know, it was just, I wasn't so bad. And it was like, so like, I could have just sat at home, felt sorry for myself and just give up on life. But that's when golf come into my life and it was literally one come in touch with the other. And it was just that particular time in my life where I needed it and it was there. So.
Oh, Mike, you're a true inspiration. You really are. The people at On Course Foundation, those guys, how much have they helped you?
Oh, they changed my life. You know, they're amazing. They've changed so many lives as well. It's not just mine. I've taken mine to the extreme, like with my golf. But so the object of what the On Course Foundation does is it takes injured servicemen and gets them into the golf industry, whether it be greenkeeping, you know, mechanics behind the bar or anything, you know, because there's so much variety in golf. It's not just about the golf. And it's like, for me, this is what I fell in love with. Like, not one person would have met in this room if it wasn't for golf. You know, I'm not just saying that, but like, that's what I love about it. You just meet, you can take four people, go out on a golf course and you're best of mates afterwards. And it's just amazing. So, yeah, that's what the On Course is for us. There's a lot of us that lost a lot and, we gained a lot back from it.
Oh, it's that connection, isn't it?
For
feeling
sure.
Part of something, feeling part of a team and a family environment.
Because like everyone's lost their units and, you know, everyone's in the same boat. Like they've lost their jobs. They've lost, you know, what their purpose in life of being a soldier. And it's a totally different context, but golf gives you that back within the foundation because we're all in that same boat. We've all been through the similar situations and we're all coming out the other side.
Yeah, it's an incredible story. And you're doing so well. You've just recently won in Texas on the G4D Tour, PGA Tour.
Yeah.
So that was your third win, is that correct?
Yeah, that's my third win. So 2022, I won the Irish Open at Mount Juliet and then won the... What did I run last time? Oh, the race to Dubai.
You won the race to Dubai. I know. I've seen pictures with you with Rory McIlroy.
Yeah, that was amazing. Like, I got to spend about half an hour with him in a room and we were just chatting about Ryder Cup and it was, I just could
listen. Nice guy? We know he's a nice guy.
Yeah, he's a top dude. So it was just, that was very surreal being out. But what made me was like, when Iona called my name out, like winner of this, Rory just said, "What am I?" Slapped me on the back and just started clapping. I was like, "That's so surreal," you know. Oh. Yeah, it's crazy. But
well, you weren't it. You weren't it. What?
Yeah.
And then you recently won in Texas. So this is the first G4D event on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, so we made a bit of history. That was the first
golf
ever
for disabilities.
Yeah. So it's it's basically a top 10 in the world rankings for disability golf. So that it's running alongside the WAGGER, the World Amateur Golf, because it's full of professionals and amateurs. So it's, yeah, it's run exactly the same. So yeah, I've just got to number one amputee in the world, and
oh,
number three.
Clap.
Yeah, so yeah, it's pretty cool.
How's that feel?
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's not just pretty cool, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's...
What do family and friends say?
Yeah, they are just, like, especially my mum, she's over the moon, so...
That's so... Because, yeah, cool. She will have been through a flipping journey
with
everything.
Yeah, she's been crazy.
My goodness, over the last 15 years.
Yeah.
And so what's next for you, Mike? I mean, it's like the world's your oyster right now.
Yeah, so BMW Wentworth, got that coming up.
So you're playing in...
Yeah, I'm playing the G4D on the Monday, Tuesday, but because of my race to Dubai... and Texas, fingers crossed, we might have a main start. So.
Who's going to support Mike if he's going to play in the PGA Championship at Wentworth? We support.
So we've got a few things coming in.
That's so exciting.
So we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, totally. So how do you feel when you step out on a golf course?
I love it. I love everything about golf. Yeah. I mean, it's that fact of, like, especially in tournament golf, I love the nerves. That I still get nerves, and I used to hate it, but now I learned to love it. And I think that's progressed me to become a better player. It's just like Tom was saying earlier, when you free swing, you can win a lot.
Yeah. Well, you can. And what's the strength to your game? What's your favourite part of your game?
At the moment, driving. Yeah. I'm driving the ball really well at the moment.
I know, I've listened to all your interviews, and it's like you've said driving in every one, because you're so consistent with it.
Yeah, I mean, I signed with Shrixon this year, so I went over with them, and yeah.
Great.
It's game-changing for me, so.
Oh, in our podcast, I speak to quite a few of the guests. They talk about discipline and how important discipline is. Our latest, one of our guys that spoke on the podcast was Victor Cruz, who won the Super Bowl. He's an NFL player back in 2012 with the New York Giants. touchdown! I just want to say that word. But he talks about how discipline was so important in his professional career. With what you do, do you have to be disciplined?
Definitely. And obviously, I'm getting older, so I've got to be more disciplined with gym and stuff I eat. And as like Tom, I know he's played on some amazing tours again, and it's like you just got to keep doing that process and be dedicated to it. And the more dedicated I am, I find the better I'm playing. So I'm just going to keep at it.
And lots of our guests, they talk about breath work and meditation or mantras they say to themselves. Do you have any sort of man management or woman management skills that you say to yourself?
I just, my one thought on the tee is hit it hard.
Okay.
Because when I hit it hard, I commit, and that's the only thing I can do.
Commit to it.
Yeah.
I like it. Oh, Mike, I've loved listening to your story. And I just feel that I will get out onto that golf course, and for you, I'll go under par. I hope I don't end up in the trees now. has anyone got any questions for Mike? One here from Steve. Is your golfing hero?
So I'm quite, like I say, I'm quite late in life, so I missed like the greats of Seve and all that. I sort of come in later, but I'm going to probably say someone like, it's got to be Rory for me. Yeah. I mean, the stuff he's done is like phenomenal. The way he changed his whole life around the game is just, it just blows my mind just to watch him on the range. And so I've done a few like range sessions with him, just being next to him and stuff. And it's just, I could just stay there watching him all day. It's crazy.
Well, that's a sentence. It's a sentence I'll never say, though. I've done a few range sessions with Rory McIlroy. Will he win a major?
Yeah, it's not if, it's when.
Okay.
Like, I think, he's going to win some more. He's too good not to.
What is your dream four ball on your dream course?
Cypress Point.
Has anyone been to Cypress Point?
If anyone's been there.
Kingsley's been.
That's my ultimate.
Gorgeous.
Meant to be, like, insane, but...
I've been to Pebble.
Is this dead or alive?
Any. Yeah.
So it'd have to be, for me, definitely Seve. Just from the videos of what I've watched of him and stuff like that. And obviously Rory. And I don't think you can count out Tiger, so that would be definitely my three.
That's a brilliant. It's a good one, isn't it? One here from Tom. How does your leg affect your technique? What adjustments do you have to make?
I don't know, because I never played before. But for me, what I find difficult is stances, like uphill, downhill, side lies, etc. Because everything is backwards for me. So if I'm on a downhill lie, mine goes left. Because of my balance, I almost have to pull it. So everything's left. And then when I'm uphill, I have to push it. So everything's right. So I'm literally opposite. But yeah, pretty much stances and all that sort of stuff, which is quite hard. Because obviously I haven't got a knee. Downhill, uphill is very difficult for me. But we overcome it.
God, you adapt. You're versatile.
Exactly,
it's amazing. Yeah. So Ollie's got a question. Here we go. Ollie, what's your question?
Do you think it helped not having learnt golf at all before your injury in terms of you hadn't formed a natural swing?
100%, yeah. I think if I'd played before, I wouldn't have probably carried on playing just because I wouldn't have been able to do what I did previously. So, I think it would have definitely had a detrimental effect to me not playing, for sure.
We always ask on Why Golf our clubhouse curveballs. First question is, which we may have answered already, your favourite golf course in the world?
Cypress Point.
Cypress Point.
Not that I've played it, but that's one I really want to play.
Great stuff. When you're number two, packing your golf bag, what is the one thing that you always put in your golf bag for a round of golf?
My green TheraBand.
Oh, for stretching on the course.
Yeah.
What do you do with your green TheraBand?
Everything. So I've got a sturdy one, so that's my warm-up routine, and obviously I'm getting old and I've got quite a few joints that don't work, so I need it, and I can't travel anywhere without that.
Right, okay. This is in your golf bag as well, though?
Yep.
Yeah, great. So on the third tee, you do some stretches?
It's always in there, and my lucky ball marker.
What does it say on your ball marker?
It's got my dad's initials on.
Oh, what are the initials?
DA.
DA, brilliant. And does it help with your putting? Sometimes.
Depends which course I'm on.
Good stuff. And finally, what is your drink of choice on the 19th hole? We've had a whole array of drinks so far.
I like a gin and ginger ale.
Good choice. That's my
go-to. Nice and light and refreshing.
Actually, very refreshing. I'm going to try that. Definitely here at Sunningdale Heath. I'm sure they'll make one for us. And last question. How did you find good coaches who could fully understand your physical limitations?
That's a really good question, actually.
Is that from Simon? Well done, Simon. Yeah. You get nothing, actually. But, oh, no, you do. We now have gift bags, which is great. So you can have one of those.
So my first ever coach was a chap called Alistair Barr. This was through the On Course Foundation. So he was he's a master pro. He was part of the foundation. So he sort of did everything back in the day. But he sort of...
He was at Jared's Cross, wasn't he?
Yes, I think he was, yeah. Yeah.
Jared's Cross,
yeah. So he sort of used to try and teach me the PGA way, which, you know, we can't... I couldn't get into some positions that a PGA, you got to be here, and I just can't do that sometimes. So he was like, right, we'll start from scratch on how you swing. And then we just worked around that, and we worked to my limitations. And so we learned to basically hit the ball straight first, and that then we increased the power. But I think like most people nowadays, they just hit as hard as they can and then dial it in. But I was the other way around. So that's how we sort of figured everything out of what my limitations were and where I was hitting a straight ball. So like if I hit a ball even now of like 80% or more, I'm like quite wayward. So I've got to control it. But and all that is balance for me. So I have to do a lot of balance work, a lot of core strength, and that's what gets me to be able to complete my swing. So yeah.
Oh, Mike, you're brilliant. We're so impressed with what you've achieved and what you will continue to achieve. Ladies and gents, put your hands together, please, for
Thanks
Mike Brown.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That concludes our Why Golf podcast, and you have been the best audience so far tonight. So I thank you for coming and supporting, and we hope to go on the road more, but I know that this is a really special place for you to come up here to Sunningdale Heath to play golf and to be part of this community. And thank you for listening tonight. Some really lovely stories that will inspire us all, I'm sure, when we next hit the golf course. Good evening, everyone. Thank you.